Up next, we are going to talk about a profound near-death experience with Tricia Baker. Her special book, of course, Angels in the OR, and she is next with us. It's an incredible story, an emotional story as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you a little bit about our next guest. Tricia Baker experienced a very profound near-death experience during her senior year of college. She'll explain that for us. This experience guided her to teach overseas in public schools and at the college level. This near-death experience story has been featured on I Survived Beyond and Back and featured on the Dr. Oz Show as well. Her memoir tells a story of her near-death experience, teaching mission, and eventual triumph over this incredible trauma that she had in her past. Angels in the OR, an OR, of course, stands for operating room. What dying taught me about healing, survival, and transformation. Tricia, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm a big fan. I'm happy to be on this program.
Well, I loved your book, and in some cases, it's pretty emotional. You've gone through a lot, you know, a lot.
Yeah, but, you know, that allows me to connect with so many people and to talk about healing. And I think that one of the messages from the other side is love and healing. And so if I can spread healing, that's what I'm called to do, you know?
So if we talk about some of the past things that happened to you, will you be okay with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't want to drum up anything that might be painful or emotional for you.
No, not at all. I put it all in the book because it's common for many people.
Okay.
Most of the traumas that I've been through, you know, I've worked in public schools and I am familiar with what people have gone through.
Let's go back before the near-death experience. Who was Tricia Baker?
You know, I grew up in a religious home, but it was, you know, fairly abusive. My mother and I had difficulties, and my father was somewhat neglectful. So I loved studying, though. That was my escape. I lost myself in books and AM radio. And, you know, I was a thinker, couldn't wait to get to college. And I worshiped, you know, in those halls at college. That was my love, but I hadn't done a lot of emotional healing from that past. And I kind of got lost in the party scene at college, as many people can, and I was agnostic. So I really just didn't think about dying, didn't think about death. It wasn't on my radar.
An agnostic, for some folks, is somebody who could believe in a higher power but wants some facts and evidence, unlike an atheist who just doesn't believe anything.
Right, right. I wasn't that hardcore. Many of my friends were atheists, but I loved poetry and Walt Whitman.
I think we may have lost her. Tom, give her a call back. Let's see where she is. She popped right off and did that. Sometimes when you start talking about near-death experiences, the devil takes over, something like that. But the worst comes to worst, Tom, you might have to use her cell phone as well, and we'll do that. But our special guest is Tricia Baker. Her book is called Angels in the OR. We're just talking about her experience before her near-death experience, which we'll get into, and God willing, we'll get her back on soon enough. If not, to preserve the... Tommy says we have her. There, see? The devil's got you this time, not the angels. So we were talking about who you were, what you were like. You were agnostic as a college student. Let's pick it up from there, Tricia.
Right, right. So I was agnostic and did not, you know, was not interested in spirituality or religion. So a near-death experience was the last thing I could imagine happening.
So when you were doing some of this, let's get into now the near-death experience. What happened to you?
Yeah, so I was on my way to run the Austin 10K, which is a huge race in Austin, Texas. And
you know my buddy Alex Jones down there?
No, I don't.
he's a tough talk show host and investigative reporter, and I call him a bulldog. He's when you really get to know the guy, he's got a heart of gold. If you don't know him, you think he's a crazed wacko. But you know, that's another story.
Yes, yeah, so I was on my way to run that race, and I had pretty much a head-on collision. It was a strange little intersection and broke my back in three places. There were three shattered vertebrae, and I couldn't reach my license and registration in the glove box, so I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong. And I knew that my life was out of my hands at that moment. But yeah, I was taken in for emergency spinal surgery. I remember signing this form that said a 17% chance of death. And I thought, that's really specific, but whatever. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy. This should be, you know, not a big deal. It was a long wait for a surgeon. But when I went into surgery,
were you awake for this?
You know, I was in a lot of pain, and I was screaming, and there was quite a bit of physical trauma. You know, I had internal injuries as well as the shattered back. So by the time they took me in, you know, I was just out of it, you know, in great, great pain.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went under, I woke up, and this is the way I describe it. I lifted up out of my body. And George, I have to tell you, in those first few moments, I was convinced that I was experiencing a spiritual reality.
Yes.
So this was not a dream. This was not a hallucination. I have had those, you know, and this was different because I could see the doctors and I could see my spirit form and I could intuit that I was in this place where information was shared at high levels of speed. There were angels in the operating room, and that's why I titled the book Angels in the OR, because they shocked me. They were these highly intelligent beings. And I called them, at first, I was uncomfortable calling them angels. I called them intelligent beings, beings of light. Then I eventually realized, you know, they are messengers from God. Okay, they're angels. You know, like there was this period of time, though, where I was just, you know, when I thought about those angels, I was in absolute shock at how amazing they were. I mean, that amount of intelligence that they were transmitting through telepathy and light into my body was into my spirit body and into my physical body amazed me. I mean, that first moment outside of physical form was powerful.
Was this the kind of proof you needed as an agnostic to start believing that maybe there's something else going on here?
Oh, yeah, that was it. You know, that was all I needed. If my near-death experience had stopped at that point, I would have still come back and gone, yes, there's a spiritual reality, but there was so much more to it. You know, as these beings sent light into my physical form, they wanted me to see that they had the power to help heal my body. And so they were sending this light through the back of the surgeons into my spine. I had lost feeling in my left leg, so I was really afraid that I was not going to walk or, you know, run ever again. But they assured me that I would. And then the monitor flatlined, and I thought, oh, dear, this is death. What do I do?
And you're still hovering over your body while this is happening?
Yes, and my spirit form was made of light, and I just knew that the essence of me continued on, and it never died. Like, that was just what I understood, and I wasn't scared by it. I was actually excited. There's a part, I think we carry with us a part of who we are in life, and there's this part of me that's adventurous and playful and curious, and I just was in shock by this environment and very excited by it, actually. So I wanted to see what was next, and I left that hospital room, and I have a verifiable detail. These types of near-death experiences, researchers love them because it in a sense, proves that consciousness survives form.
So, especially when you flatline like that.
Yes. So I saw my stepdad getting a candy bar out of a machine, and that was later verified that he indeed did get that candy bar. But then my soul just left that environment, and I felt this sense of oneness with everyone. And when I say that, you know, it's hard to imagine understanding many people's souls all at one time, but I kind of merged with everyone who I'd ever known, everyone in the city of Austin, and I just felt great peace. You know, that was the
So you kind of, so your body, your soul, whatever this is, left the operating room entirely at this point?
Oh yes. I was done with that. I didn't want to see how they revived me. That sounded kind of boring. It seemed like, you know, there's a whole universe of information out there. I want to see what I can find, you know, out there. And that feeling of oneness was kind of like my soul just saying goodbye to everyone and feeling at peace with the idea of death. And I was beginning to feel this consciousness of God, and the only way I can describe it is through light, this intelligence that seemed to be streaming toward me, and it was meeting me with such grace and such love, but it seemed to be coming from a long way away from the cosmos, from the stars, mm-hmm. from this place that was far away. And as I transitioned through the night sky, I kind of ended up in the cosmos, and that energy was with me, and I had what many near-death experiencers have, which is a life review. And this life review, I think some people fear it as they get older. You know, like, oh dear, I have to live through everything
That's
I've
right.
done.
Well, of course, they know what they did.
Right. But the love of God was very compassionate, but there was this sense of being a great teacher, and God wanted to show me not to judge others, to basically look into the hearts of others and see their goodness and look for that. And that was a big lesson to a 22-year-old. You know, they can be a little fashion conscious and style conscious and, you know, silly. And I didn't always judge people in the right ways. I didn't look for their goodness. I just, if they didn't go to my college, I wasn't interested in them. And I saw these really, really kind people who cared about me, and I was humbled that here I was working side by side as a waitress, and this couple prayed for me every night because they thought I seemed depressed or sad, and I didn't even give them the time of day. And I realized, oh, wow, I need to definitely be a kinder person to everyone around me. And that was my great lesson. Of course, there were other lessons that were happening at that time, and one of them was...
And everything's happening fast because, you know, time is irrelevant when you're out of your body, but in terms of the near-death experience, that lasts for just, what, a couple minutes maybe?
Right. This was only 2.5 minutes. That's what I verified with the doctor later, but it felt like days. You know, each part of the experience felt profound, and though simplistic in some ways, some of the messages were like, love is all that matters, and be like a little child, and remind them to go to nature. And I remember my part of myself, I thought, this is the message I have to bring back? How is this going to help humanity? Come on, God, give me something
a
little.
Did you, at what point did you think, Tricia, you were going to come back?
Well, because I saw the angels working on my body, I thought it was a possibility. But as I got deeper into the experience, I didn't necessarily want to come back. And
really?
So, yeah. That was.
I hear that a lot, though, from people who've had these experiences where they just are so relaxed and calm, they don't want to come back into their body.
Right. And in many ways, I had kind of a difficult life. So feeling that love of God as I started getting closer to that, that washed away all pain, all. When we're in our physical forms, we often feel a little uncomfortable, you know, just maybe we need a glass of water, or, you know, we're longing for something. But in that environment, you're not longing for anything. Everything is perfect. And that's, you know, that's encouraging. It's a nice way to feel and a nice way to be. I've heard Mary Neal speak and other near-death experiencers who had great lives. Many of them didn't want to come back. In fact, the ones who seem to fight for their lives are ones who are deeply worried about their children. Maybe they have very young children and they feel, you know, tied to them in some way. But me, I was enjoying that environment. And after that moment where I looked at my life and the life review.
And how old were you when this happened?
I was 22.
Gee, you were young, still a kid, basically.
Yeah. So my life review wasn't that long. It's going to be a lot longer this time.
But even at 22, you were just willing to just go to the other side.
Yeah, I guess there was some part of me that was very attracted to that environment and loved it. You know, just I felt more me than I do in body, if that makes sense. You know, that's a weird way to describe it, but I felt more alive dead than I feel alive.
At what point did you begin to come back into your body from the near-death experience?
Well, it was a while. So first I transitioned to this heavenly landscape and spent time with my grandfather, and then I went to the light of God. And as I was going closer to that light of God, this is the part of the experience that changed me forever. I knew that God was pure love and that I was safe to love, and God was nothing but this profound love that we don't ever fully experience while here. And that's what broke my heart open, is this profound longing for God. And many near-death experiencers, I'm not the only one, come back and miss that passion. I mean, if you just imagine the amplifier being turned up to 1 million, you know, like we've only experienced 1/100th of what love can be, and then you're just zapped with this amazing love. It's so attractive, and I wanted to go deeper and deeper into that love of God and feel safe and happy. And then I was stopped at some point, and I was shown that I had to be a teacher. And not every near-death experiencer is given a particular mission, but I was given one, and I actually argued with God for a minute because I'd grown up poor, and I said, "Teaching? You mean like literally a teacher? No way! You know, like I don't want to do that. I don't want to be poor." And God laughed, and then I was sent back into my body. At that point, I was literally just kicked, you know, from the heavens, and I felt this dark wind envelop me, and then I felt sucked back into my body.
Once you were in your body, did you revive right away? You must have been in massive pain. What happened?
Yeah, so the first thing that I remember is being in the recovery room, and one of the nurses was asking me if I knew my name, and I knew I was different from that very first moment. I remember thinking, oh, yeah, I remember her name. So I looked at myself as third person. I knew that I had been connected to this greater consciousness beyond my body, and then suddenly I had to be this body, you know, with this particular life, and it annoyed me, you know, from the beginning to be compressed back into Trisha Barker. You know, that seemed rather annoying.
Who could barely walk, I guess, at this point, right?
I was definitely, you know, like full of morphine. I'd just come out of surgery with lots of anesthesia, but I had enough awareness to ask my surgeon very quickly how long I had died. And she was unnerved by this and said a couple of minutes, you know, maybe 2 minutes or so.
Did she ask you, how did you know you flatlined?
She did not ask that. I saw her visibly stepping away from me as if she was
uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. She must have gone through this before with some other victims or people who have died.
Yeah. Well, I've heard terrible stories of near-death experiencers who have been referred to psychologists or committed for talking about this.
While Tricia, you were in this near-death experience state, did you communicate with these angels that were in the operating room?
You know, I communicated with them more when I left the hospital.
All right, let's talk about what you talked with them about. And I understand God gave you a specific mission when you returned. We'll talk about that too. And welcome back. We're with Tricia Barker as we're talking about her work, Angels in the OR. Tricia, as we get into these angel stories and also this specific task you were asked, where do you get the book? Where can people pick it up?
You know, you can get it through Audible, actually. If you haven't tried Audible, they give away a free trial. But on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million.
Oh, so it's everywhere.
iTunes. Yeah, it's everywhere.
Is this your first one?
This is. I've published a lot of poetry and academic essays, but it's never a full-length book. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let us talk about the angels, first of all. When you were in this near-death state, what did they talk with you about?
They showed me that they can work through other people and they could work through the surgeons, whether the surgeons were aware of it or not. So they could assist them energetically with the surgery that they were performing. And so I believed that they could assist me as I taught in public schools. And there were many times that I felt, as I was a teacher, this energy come over me, and I would hardly even remember what I was saying during a lecture. And I teach English, so of course you can riff on a lot of different themes in literature and poetry. And it might touch a particular student who would cry after lecture and tell me something that they were going through. But I know that angels can work through us. They can orchestrate events so that you meet someone who you need to connect with at a certain time. Angels are amazing.
At what point did you get this feeling that God was trying to communicate with you and give you some kind of duty when you come back?
Well, that was during the near-death experience, and I wanted to merge with God and not come back. And I was stopped. This energetic force, it said, "You are going back. There are many souls who need you." And I was shown this river, and there were many souls along this river. Some of the souls were filled with light, others were kind of darkened, and I saw that this darkness was fear, that there is only love and there is only fear. And love means you're in a connection to your divinity, you're in a connection to God, and fear means that you are blocked from God, basically.
And you came a long way from someone who was an agnostic, not really believing at that point, to a changed person when you got out of this state.
Oh yeah, I could not stop talking about God. I probably drove people crazy because just wanted to talk about God all the time.
Now, did they give you, or did this godlike figure give you, and I assume you never physically saw what God looked like, did you? Or did you just like
No.
feel it?
No, I've interviewed many near-death experiencers at this point, and some of them do see a godlike figure, or some of them see Jesus, some of them see a religious figure, but many people see just a divine intelligence, a light that is coming at them with more love than they could ever imagine. And for me, it was just that light, and I felt like if I would have kept going, I would have understood more, but I felt God's love.
And you felt a special mission. What was that mission to be?
That I was literally to be a teacher, and not a spiritual teacher at this point, but to teach in public schools and colleges and reach out to students who were in need, who perhaps were in difficult home situations or didn't have a good self-esteem or needed encouragement in some way. They needed to be reminded of their strength and to let go of their fears and to live life more fully. And so teachers often are able to ignite that in a student, to make them feel better about themselves in some way, and that was my mission.
What was your initial curriculum at the University of Texas? What were you studying to be?
Well, I was studying English, but I was planning on going to law school, and eventually my plan was to maybe work in editing for a while, then go to law school, and I wanted to make money. I did not want to be a teacher.
Well, teachers are hardworking and dedicated, but they don't make a lot of money, as you
And
know.
I'd grown up poor, and so I resented that on some level, and I was really shocked that that was my mission. But I have to tell you, I've loved every minute of being in the classroom.
How long did it take you to start walking after the surgery?
It took a couple of weeks to make it to the mailbox, and then it took close to a month to make it to the end of the street. And there were so many people who were retired in my parents' little cul-de-sac, and they would watch me every morning walking. And I had this big, bulky, in the 90s, you wore a body cast. And if you can imagine that in Texas heat,
Oh my
this was
God,
summer.
like a robot.
It was rough. So 4 months in a body cast and then several more months in a brace. And then a year later, I ran that Austin 10K.
So once you got your teacher certificate, where did you go to teach?
I taught in South Korea. That was one of the first
South
places
Korea. How did you end up there?
that it was somewhat random. I did my student teaching in Austin and loved that group of students, and then I felt like I could combine perhaps teaching and travel. And so I looked at Japan and I looked at South Korea and I ended up there.
Did you know how to speak Korean?
No. And in fact, I met many students. All you needed was a degree, so you didn't have to have a teaching degree, and you were going to teach conversational English.
Oh, that's what they wanted you for.
Right.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Right.
So they could understand you learning English, but you couldn't understand them.
Oh, yes. People in the streets would pull you to the side and ask you to tutor their kids because, you know, English is important over there for business.
Interesting. So while this is all going on, without being too graphic here, something happened to you.
Yeah, so just a couple of years after my near-death experience, I experienced sexual assault in South Korea. And this is actually pretty common for people who travel overseas, whether live overseas, if it's the Peace Corps or teaching, because the same laws don't apply. You're not a citizen of South Korea. You're basically a bit more vulnerable. And that was shocking. So to experience a physical trauma after this powerful, amazing spiritual transformation, I was clearly back in my body at that point, and I was pretty upset, you know, to go through this moment. But it became something that allowed me to go, okay, so I've had the most profound, beautiful spiritual experience out there, and now one of the most painful physical experiences that anyone can go through. How am I going to heal this? And how am I going to help every young man or woman who I encounter who has experienced something similar? What type of healing is available? And so it was a, you know, it took many years to get to a point where I did the healing work that I needed to do, but I quickly found that you know, I encountered plenty of students who'd suffered the same trauma.
Did you know the person who assaulted you?
I did. I did. He was a Hagwon owner, and that's an owner of a school. So.
Okay. Did you prosecute him? What happened there?
And when you are a foreigner and you're living in South Korea, you get laughed at, but if you even go to the police. So that was a kind of a sad part of the story, but I had Korean girlfriends who said, don't even bother going to the police. We hardly get justice ourselves, so why do you think you're going to get justice? And I still wanted to make the report, but they assured me it wasn't worth it.
How long did you stay in South Korea after all this happened?
I tried to get out as soon as I could. I waited for a few more paychecks and then left.
So you've gone through an after-death experience. You start to heal. You get your degree. You go out and teach. And then you get assaulted.
Yeah, so it really is a different experience in that I was clearly in the body, and yet I knew that healing comes from the spiritual realm. So that became my quest on some level. I started looking at people who were veterans who had PTSD, or women who'd been assaulted, or people who'd had tough lives in some way, had gone through a lot of trauma, and I saw that energetically their chakra systems were compromised at times. But I knew God had said, remind them to go to nature. I knew that my healing increased when I meditated in nature, when I let these really peaceful moments begin to work on these moments in my body, that I began to release them more. When I called on the angels to start working on me energetically, then I saw that this could happen. And then I was an experimenter. I tried so many different healing modalities, everything from acupuncture to energy work. And I think that focus of love on oneself is so important. A lot of times people who are traumatized, it takes them a while to go, okay, I need to take care of myself. But more than that, I think the most important part is making this world safer. Because if you connect your mission to making this world better, then you feel somehow that it's all worth it, if that makes sense.
At any point, Tricia, did you tap into these angels that were with you in the operating room?
Oh, many times. At first, I was angry with them. I was like, why did you not protect me from this? Why did this happen? You know, and then there were some moments where I went through the natural grieving process where I was angry. But eventually, I saw that I was simply going to connect with way more people because of that experience, that it was something that was going to open me up to help so many people heal. And I can't tell you, over the years, I've taught thousands of students at this point, and dozens of them, maybe close to hundreds of them, have come to me with various traumas, whether it's a young boy who's getting beaten by his father, or a young boy who was raped as a kid, or a young woman who was sexually assaulted on a date. You know, I can't tell you how many people have opened up to me.
And you are now a medium as well?
Yeah, that's...
When did that happen?
You know, I resisted it. I knew that I could communicate with my grandfather in the afterlife. And then when my father died, that ability opened up and I knew I could communicate with him. But I resisted doing that for other people until students started asking me who'd lost kids or lost a family member. And I started getting messages and just relaying them to my students. And they were so receptive and happy. And then in different Facebook groups, near-death experiencers communicate with people who are interested in them, and I started doing more readings for others and opening up and talking to lots of different mediums and learning more about it. And yeah, it's a beautiful skill, being an evidential medium and being able to verify certain moments. Mm-hmm. is exciting.
The spirits ever bother you, though, to the point where you can't get any sleep?
That's a really good question, George. You know, if I get too excited, sometimes they affect my technology and I have to go ground, you know, and there are times when I do ask just to be left alone. I think I've learned how to handle it more. I think initially, after the near-death experience, I was shocked because there were many moments when there was a ghost interrupting something that's going on, and I just intuitively knew to ask it to go back to the light and to share my near-death experience and go, let's open up this portal, let's allow you to go back into the light. But yeah, occasionally.
Tricia, what's the main message you'd like readers to get when they read Angels in the OR?
You know, that anything that you have gone through, everyone has trauma, whether this is the loss of a job, the loss of a loved one, something that happened in childhood, whatever it is, that there is healing that's available for you. And I do believe that God and the angels and that spiritual reality wants to assist us in our healing, and that if we call for it, if we spend time in nature, then we can certainly heal many things about us. And my whole mission is that love is all that matters. And so whenever I encounter anyone, whatever they are going through, you know, it is from a place of love. And if we all interacted in that way, what a better world this would be.
Absolutely. Now tell me about your online near-death experience summit.
Yeah, so I've partnered with Dr. Raymond Moody. You might have heard of him.
Oh, great guy. Think the world of him.
And Lisa Smart. Uh-huh. And we have put together an amazing summit. We have so many great speakers. Dr. Jeffrey Long is speaking. Eben Alexander and Karen Newell, Nancy Rhines, Howard Storm, Paul Perry, David Ditchfield. I don't know if you know of him, but he had... He came back with musical abilities after his near-death experience.
And didn't have any before that, right?
Right. Just amazing. Leslie Lupo and Dr. Chicoria, John Burke, who has a best-selling book. So many near-death experiencers and researchers at this summit. And it is online, so you can watch all the videos ahead of time. And then on June 23rd, you can ask your questions of these researchers, because a lot of times the Q&A sessions at any event is the fun part, where people get their questions
answered. They love that. Well, tell Raymond Moody hello, and also Eben, if you would, on our behalf.
Oh, I will.
Two great people who just really care what they're doing. And Eben had an epiphany when he had his near-death experience. I think it changed his life.
Oh, yes. I love talking with him about his experience. It's fascinating. And that people get the opportunity to ask him their questions, I think, is the really cool part of this. And that's at theuniversityofheaven.com. If people go there, they can find it.
Tricia's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to break pretty soon for a few moments and come back and take phone calls with her. If you have had a near-death experience, give us a call. If you have a question, give us a call as well. Did this experience make you a better person? I mean, to the point where would you have done it again?
That's a fascinating question. Yes, I think I don't want to go through the physical pain, but I look at the difference between myself before and after, and I can see the light in my eyes. I can see that I smile more, that I'm less self-conscious, that my whole mission is to spread love and to connect with other people, and that's not who I was before. My whole mission was, this is about me, you know.
That changed a lot. Well, we're going to come back. We'll take some phone calls next, Tricia. Tricia Barker with us, her book, Angels in the OR. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.